You're listening to The Obscure Gentleman, a weekly pop cultural nostalgia podcast. I am your host, Aaron Alvarez. And who might you be?
I am Alex Mitchell, your co-host.
You're a robot.
Yes.
Let's just jump right into this. Let's just go into the meat pool. I don't know what that means. Yeah. Let's just do it though.
Back together again, eh? Let's play.
I'm going in. Cover me, Porkins.
I'm right with you, Red 3.
But I don't want to be a pirate.
Looks like Daddy's bringing home the barbecue.
These donuts are great.
I'd buy that for a dollar.
Oh! Dodson. Dodson. We've got Dodson here.
You don't know what hard times are, Daddy.
All we had to do was follow the damn train, CJ.
It was me all along, Austin.
No!
The origins of Wonder Woman lie in a man called William Moulton Marston, who was not only a comic book writer, he was also a psychologist.
Oh.
And he's most notable, aside from Wonder Woman, for inventing what came to be known as the polygraph machine.
Oh, wow, okay.
Which is, I guess, the lie detector test, you could call it.
Yeah.
And people always like to tie that in with, and he also invented the lasso of truth, which, I mean, is similar, I guess.
Okay. Kind of. Yeah, it's kind of.
Right. But yeah, the origins are kind of awkward and odd. Normally when DC talks about it, they talk about, like, you know, he's inspired and all that stuff and blah, blah, blah. But the origins behind it are, so, Marston was called, and still kind of exists today in a different form, he was a female supremacist.
A female supremacist?
Yes. He and his wife and his wife's female lover, they were into polyamory. And
okay.
Again, this is the 40s, the 1940s.
That's pretty crazy.
Well, going back to the 30s even, they were way ahead of their times in terms of their thinking and the way they did things, but he believed himself that women were superior to men in every single way, that they could take more pain, that they're stronger, which, and there have been studies, their pain threshold is a little bit higher.
You're going to piss off a lot of people with this episode.
Oh, I know. But yeah, he believed that women were superior to men, men should be subservient, that sort of thing. Yeah. And
so that's what people think feminism is. If we're good.
Yes, a lot of people confuse feminism with
that.
With female supremacy. Female supremacy, which he was into, and also he was into polyamory and a bunch of other kink bondage sort of things.
I didn't know that. I couldn't tell based on these covers.
That's the one thing people always mention about him, is like, he was into bondage and S&M. While that was true, he was also into other things, which was like the supremacy thing. So in those early appearances of Wonder Woman, there is this sort of notion that, yeah, like, women are 100% greater than men. Also that men are too ruthless and all this stuff. And so the idea of Wonder Woman came from what he wanted to do was, he wanted to create a superhero who was about peace. Superman had appeared a few years earlier before the creation of Wonder Woman. This was about 1938. And so this big trend was happening. Like, superheroes were, like,
yeah,
like popping off.
Green Arrow, you had Batman, you had,
Green Arrow came a little later.
Okay.
Yeah. You had Batman. You had all these, like, pretty much no names no one cares about anymore.
Okay.
I mean, the early Golden Age, a lot of these heroes
what,
didn't.
What, Seven Soldiers, or is that after
Seven Soldiers of Victory is later.
Okay.
But you did have, like, the early Green Lantern, you had the early Flash. You did have Namor the Submariner. You had the Human Torch.
The Captain Submariner, America. I always called him as a kid.
It sounds like he eats submarine sandwiches.
Yep.
Captain America. You had all these. But the thing is, there was no prominent female hero. And the thing is, while he was making or creating this character or trying to brainstorm it, his wife suggested, why don't you make her a female? And he was like, oh, that's a good idea.
So he drew it, and he was like, that's a female.
Yes.
Friday.
God damn it. So, yeah. So,
sorry, I it's been in my head for a while now.
So, he created Wonder Woman with, and she was based off of his wife and his wife's girlfriend.
Did she look like them?
No, because she look-wise, she was based off of pinups at the time.
Okay.
And again, this was like early 40s, so it wasn't like the true age of the pinup would come like 10 years later.
Yeah.
But this is still, pinups still existed in the 40s. But it was more in the kink area. Oh, wow. That was a noise. Okay, so,
what's her origin?
Before we get into that, there's still more. Oh, wow. To introduce her, he couldn't outright just like Wonder Woman number one or whatever. He couldn't do that.
No.
How you introduce characters back then, there's two ways. If you had a lot of fucking money, you could pay the publisher to essentially put your character out there.
Okay.
Usually how it would do is they would introduce them in an anthology book.
Or like Amazing Fantasy
15. Well, I mean, even look at Superman. Superman was in Action Comics. Batman was in Detective Comics. You have Green Lantern and All-American. Like, they all come in different...
They didn't have their own book,
until they became popular enough.
Yeah.
Okay, so it's 1941, and he's currently writing All-Star Comics. And All-Star Comics is essentially the home of the Justice Society of America.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the thing is, she appears in this, but not in a back... So there's... Justice Society had the main story, they had backups, and then they had a featuring. And the featuring was always like the little tiny, no one gives a shit.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
So he was writing those in All-Star Comics. He wasn't writing the main book. And so he decided to introduce Wonder Woman. And so this goes into her, so it's 1941, this goes in All-Star Comics number 8, this goes into her origin of sculpted from clay.
Okay, so that was her.
She was sculpted from clay by Queen Hippolyta, and Steve Trevor crashes on the island, and she has to go back to the world of men. Again, it was only a part one thing, and it didn't really... But the thing is, it captivated enough people that by next year, they launched a new anthology book called Sensation Comics. And with Sensation Comics, Wonder Woman continues her story. And the story was, she's essentially fighting Nazis, because... Unlike the movie that a lot of people are probably thinking, wait, Nazis. Wonder Woman, when she was first written, it was World War II.
Yeah.
She's fighting Nazis, she's fighting...
So they updated, I shouldn't say updated, they literally didn't update. So they changed the setting in the movie to World War I. I was reading that people were saying probably because of Captain America.
The official reasoning isn't that. It's that... Using World War One seems more fresh, and also
it does,
and also the reasoning I read was that it was the first time in history that it truly felt like all of mankind was connected
and was trying to destroy each other.
It's not like no war before that one was like that.
Yeah,
that was the first.
It was a war to end all wars.
Yeah,
and you know what, I've always felt that World War One was like more, it's more of a neutral kind of scenario. And I mean that in like, it's morally ambiguous.
Yeah.
Whereas World War Two is kind of, you can't really.
Oh, yeah.
You can't really portray that as morally ambiguous unless you're a fucking asshole.
Yes.
So, like, yeah. And I guess that was the whole point, is that mankind is literally just meeting to destroy each other.
Yes.
And, I dug that new, I shouldn't say new, I dug the change.
The reinterpretation, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean...
No enemy ace, though, but it's okay.
No war in heavens, or anything like that.
War idol.
She was fighting Nazis and evil doctors. Dr. Poison was one of the early ones also.
She's Japanese, right?
In the comics, yeah. Okay. Well, was. She's been changed completely over the years.
Did you like the take they did on her?
Yeah. I mean, it's better than the weird when Luke was writing it back in the 2000s.
Oh,
he gave her like this big grimace and like this giant open eyes, and it was
I like leather bondage, the surgery, what do you call it?
In World War One, when people got disfigured,
they would give them these things
like porcelain masks, sort of things like
porcelain. That was the word.
It's if their eye was blown out.
if you've seen
Boardwalk Empire.
Boardwalk Empire, yeah, yeah. Like that guy.
So William Marston and Harry G. Peter, they're a creative team.
Harry Peter.
Yes. Harry Peter. They essentially drew Wonder Woman for a long-ass time through most of the 40s. So in Sensation, she continues her adventure that was in All-Star.
So people had to wait a while to actually see the...
it was like month to month.
Oh, okay.
I meant
from the first time to the next time she showed up.
No, it was like 2 months.
Okay.
Yeah, it wasn't that long. Now, the thing is, quickly after Sensation Comics was such a big hit, they decided to release Wonder Woman number one in 1942 as well.
Yeah.
And that came later in the year. And same creative team. And they retold the origin. They expanded it. It was... this was done... Like, it was done with Superman. Like, they... Because Superman comics... Like, in Action Comics... His origin is like one page.
So it's like when
same
they...
Same thing with Batman.
It's like when they refilm a pilot, essentially.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, and again, you know, these things were disposable, so no one was really like, caring.
No one was saving these things.
Yeah. Now these things are worth... They're worth those. Buku dollars.
Yes.
So now...
I don't know what buku means, but I know it means... It's good.
I don't know. They made a show about it. Buku no Pico or whatever. So then...
We'll cover that one day.
So then, yeah, they expanded her origin a little bit, refined it. The thing about it, though, is a lot of it still had that whole Marston's sort of take on a female superiority. And this pissed off a lot of fucking people back then. I shouldn't say a lot. That doesn't come until the 1950s, which our next episode you need to listen to. So tune in next week for that one. But it initially did piss off some parents who were like, what is my child reading out there?
Yeah, yeah.
And he came under fire, and his whole thing was, well, she's Greek with Amazon. Who cares?
that was literally just his argument.
Well, I mean, yeah.
I get that, though. I mean,
but the main thing is her adventures in Sensation and in Wonder Woman were... they weren't incredibly like frontline focused yet until the war really hit.
Yeah.
So she's fighting Nazis and stuff eventually, like a little bit, but then as soon as World War II like really like takes off, which then it like her entire comic becomes about just like smashing the fuck out of Nazis.
Yeah.
Like to a point where, I mean, this happened to almost every comic book in like,
yeah, Superman and Batman were riding on like what, big gun barrels and shit like that.
The thing is with Superman comics, he tended to stay in America. Same thing with Captain America.
Because why would I fly over there? Captain
America would fight on the front
lines. That makes sense.
Superman, no, he did stay in America.
Which doesn't make sense. He could have ended the war if he wanted to.
Yeah, but then the birds have come to join us once again.
No, they're fine.
But yeah, so throughout the 40s, it was good old Nazi smashing.
Yeah,
time,
yeah, yeah.
Which, if you want to talk about comics in the 40s, that is the best way to sum up comics in the 40s.
They're smashing Nazis.
Yeah, Nazi smashing left and right. And, you know, these comics sold pretty well. Young girls did like them. They liked them. There was also hints of subtle lesbianism throughout the comics, okay, of course, because, you know, he was...
Well, that's interesting to me that would get portrayed that early on. It's subtle, I know.
It was subtle, and also... they used a lot of subtext, and his use of it was... He didn't want publishers to know, obviously, that, like...
Oh, yeah.
That he's saying lesbianism is pretty cool. Also saying that bondage is awesome. So okay.
You can tell when you...
So here's the thing. When people like to talk about Golden Age Wonder Woman, they do talk about the bondage, mostly. That was his kink. He was into seeing women tied up, and... Yeah, okay, he's a female supremacist, but he likes seeing women tied up.
Okay.
And
he would have loved the 1800s.
His idea is that women can overcome being tied up because they're that powerful. So he liked the aspect of like seeing a woman escape.
And it's like that super dickery thing, and which I think might deserve its own episode. But it's like you always see the covers but they don't really portray exactly.
The covers were for Wonder Woman in Sensation Comics. She was actually getting tied up constantly.
But, I mean, she gets out, and, you know, she overcomes.
She gets out, but, like, you look at a lot of those early issues, and it's like, man, this feels like Tijuana Bible type stuff, except there's no, like, weirdly drawn penises.
Oh, well, yeah.
And yeah, so, but at the same time, again, this was, like, one of the only female heroes on the stands. I mean, don't get me wrong, there were other ones, they're in more minor roles, and this should also...
But when does Black Canary come into play?
Black Canary comes into play in the 1950s, I think.
Okay.
But the thing is...
Dinah Trey, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
But the thing is, that's kind of hilarious, is even though he has... No, 1947, actually.
Oh, okay.
So yeah, it's late 40s. She's interested in Flash 86. So the thing is, even though he's very progressive in his... or more ahead of his time, you could say, in terms of his ideals, when she was introduced in All-Star Comics with the JSA thing, eventually she did join the JSA.
Mm-hmm.
But not as a member, as their secretary.
Oh.
And, of course, he wasn't writing this, so, you know, gals can't be heroes, so, you know, she's like...
It's like that, that Justice League episode where they go to the comic book world.
Credit to your people.
Yeah. Oh, no, it was... because it's the Black Canary an analog in that. And she says, oh, let's bake some cookies while the men talk.
Yeah.
And it's like,
So... When, inevitably, when William Marston left the title, which was in the 50s, they decided, okay, let's fix some things. So they did a revamped origin.
Well, she's a founding member of the Justice League.
Yeah, which is in the 1960s, but in the 50s though. So this was the first case of we need to fix Wonder Woman, which ended up becoming a pattern that exists to this day.
Yeah, because I remember thinking, like, okay, that TV show that was going to come out a few years ago. I remember thinking, like, all right, this is it. They're finally going to do it.
No.
And it's, like, it's crazy to me that...
Well, comic book-wise...
You know what? Let's be real, though. Like, it takes a while to get any of these things, like, perfect, I think.
No, here's the thing, though. Like,
Batman, it took a while.
No, it didn't, though, because when you look at Batman and Superman... Their origins are... There's always different interpretations of their origins, but they're usually similar. Yeah. Like, they're very similar.
Kindly couple, yeah, that whole thing.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, arguably, if you look at Action Comics number one, just fucking, he's thrown to an orphanage.
Oh.
Like, there was no mom, pop, can. That didn't come until a little bit later. And, like, me with Batman, like, didn't have, like, the Waynes being killed until a little bit later also. But the thing
but
is...
that's so iconic.
They've had this history that's sort of just embedded in pop culture, whereas Wonder Woman... You ask them, what's her origin? She's from an island.
If that.
Yeah.
So, we saw the movie. I didn't know if people were taking the mold from clay, like as a literal thing.
They didn't... I think they purposely avoided actually showing it.
Yeah. Well, for obvious reasons, spoilers, but I mean...
No, also...
But in the case... Yeah, it would seem kind of weird, right?
They wanted to leave it up to the imagination sort of thing. So in the 50s, they revamped her. It's not a reboot, I think, but they revamped her origin because, again, disposable media, no one cared. So, and it wasn't until later that people started caring, going, wait a minute, in 1940, it's not the same as it's in 1950.
That's a new voice. I've never heard that one before. I like that.
That's pre-80s nerd, I guess, or pre-70s nerd. Because
every nerd voice now is just, well, I don't know about that, you know.
They got rid of the whole female empowerment angle. They got rid of the whole...
that sucks.
They got rid of the whole supremacy thing. They got rid of the bondage shit.
I get that.
And this was happening mainly due to a lot of shit that was going on in the courts and about censoring in the comics code, which, again, listen to our next episode. Hear more about that. This ties a lot into that. And so they did the first major revamp of Wonder Woman, and now she was more of just an action hero. She was like a typical superhero... saving the answer against her horrible rogues gallery.
What is her rogues gallery? She's got, like, female Nazi lady.
Her rogues gallery.
Cheetah.
Yeah, Cheetah's probably her most popular one.
Yeah.
She has a lot of shitty ones.
Grundy is Green Lantern. Right?
That's Alan Scott.
Yeah, okay.
That's the thing. Yeah, Wonder Woman has never had a strong rogues gallery. It's a lot of jobbers.
Yeah, I thought they did good with what they had with
it's
the
like,
movie.
It's like Green Arrow's Rogues Gallery, a bunch of jobbers also. They yeah, made Deathstroke a villain for the show because...
Well, yeah, because that show, I like that show, but like they essentially took like Batman's Rogues Gallery and a lot of them.
Deathstroke is a Teen Titans villain.
Yeah.
Which is kind of hilarious when you think
like, about it. Like, what? The Clock King.
Yeah, wait, excuse me?
The Clock King.
No. What do you mean? That's in the show?
Yeah, he's in the show.
What the fuck?
But he's not like... He was in Flash.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Again, he wasn't in costume, he was just... And I think he... Yeah, he's got whatever Alfred has in McGregor Syndrome. He's got that, so he's dying. Again, there's nothing...
He's turning into Ewan McGregor.
Ewan McGregor. No.
He's literally turning into Ewan McGregor. the 50s was the time to, it was time to revamp sort of a lot of the characters. You see Hal Jordan, you see Barry Allen, you see this wave of like new heroes or heroes getting changed a little. Superman gets changed, and we'll go into this in the next episode of why that happened, but Wonder Woman got that, and now she was just a straight up... It was the first time I'd say it was kind of like, okay, this is just streamlined. She comes from an island. She was formed of clay. They actually strengthen the Hellenistic elements of her origin, so it's even more Greek than before.
It's weird. I know she's Greek, but I do kind of consider her like an American hero.
Okay,
well, iconically, not literally.
The reasoning behind that is because in this revamped origin they had, essentially, it was that. When she went to the United States with Steve Trevor to sort of represent the United States in the war and all the war effort, and she was an ambassador.
She wears the colors of the country
of Paradise Island for the United States. So it was the whole ambassadorship thing.
Yeah,
and that's why I mean, and talking about her outfit alone, like she started off wearing a skort and then a skirt.
A skort.
It's shorts with a skirt mixed sort of thing. And then at one point she was wearing baggy shorts.
Do you like the pants and jacket?
No, I think it looks fucking terrible.
Really? I love the pants and jacket.
I like the pants. I don't like the jacket or the horrible whatever the fuck she was wearing.
Okay, to people that don't know what we're talking about, it was a big controversial thing back when this came out.
When J. Michael Straczynski was writing the title. Yeah. And they revamped her look.
His run is weird, by the way.
No, it's fucking awful.
Yeah.
Okay, this goes again to them trying to fix Wonder Woman. But, so...
Again.
So, 1960s hits, and she's a stable superhero now. Like, you know, this is the mom and pop sort of G. Willikers era of comics. At least for DC. And Brave and the Bold number 28 comes out, which is the first appearance of the Justice League. Which a lot of people don't know. And up there it says Brave and the Bold presents the Justice League of America.
Starro's on there.
And so Gardner Fox and Mike Sikowski introduce her into the team. And this is the first time she's actually not a secretary.
A member.
She's a member of the team.
So that's Wonder Woman.
Martian Manhunter.
Flash.
Aquaman. Yeah.
Okay.
It sells really well, and then it gets turned to its own title, and then so now Wonder Woman's this mainstay, and for most of the 60s, she's good on Justice League. Her title, though, is selling like dog shit.
Really?
What's hilarious, though, it was like selling over like 200,000 or like 100,000 copies.
Which would be good numbers.
Which they would be phenomenal, but back then it's like, you're only moving 100,000 units, Charlie.
When you look at TV ratings, it's the same shit, too. Like...
Yeah.
Yeah. Like...
I mean, Nielsen ratings are bullshit, but...
Fuck Nielsen.
So, 1968 comes, and... Another time of change and progressive change, because there's this new thing going on throughout comics due to Marvel. So, Marvel Comics, you know, they're the big dick on the scene now.
Yeah.
And
their comics are pretty cool.
They were also tackling social issues, or they had flawed heroes. They had all this stuff. So DC decides, okay, we got to start. You know, we're not getting sold. We're not selling as well as them, and like we're the ones who fucking publish their comics. Quick side note: early Marvel comics were actually not publish, but
I almost did it. If I had water, I would have done a spit take. What?
So they were distributed by National Periodicals.
Okay.
Those early comics, they used the same distributor. And if you're wondering why, how come those early Marvel comics, there was only like six issues, like six titles? Because National Periodicals made that a rule.
Hmm.
Yeah, and eventually they did their own thing, but they broke away. But yeah, for a while they were sort of hand in hand.
So they were the old school World War II heroes, also like Namor and Human Torch and all that, right?
No, this is the 60s. Kirby Lee era.
Okay, okay.
So this is now Denny O'Neil and Mike Sikowski again. Denny O'Neil, famous for Green Lantern, Green Arrow, and all that stuff.
His Batman
and
run.
Yes, yeah, he invigorated him and Neil Adams. Like they updated characters in brilliant ways and like bringing life with them.
And their contributions to comics
are insane.
Yeah.
Now Wonder Woman, starting with issue 168. This is the all new Wonder Woman. So essentially, what happens is it's so fucking stupid. The gods of paradise. Island, by the way, it's not called Themyscira yet. That doesn't come until way later.
Oh wow.
The gods of paradise island, and you know her mom and like all the warriors are like, we're going to another dimension. You know, we're heading out. And Wonder Woman's like, no, Steve is dying and hurting. I have to stay here to be with him. By the way, Steve Trevor was always the man in distress.
I do appreciate that.
Well, after a while, I got kind of like, what the fuck is your point?
What is the point of you?
Yeah. Like, all he would do is just, like, help. Like, it's boring when that's the female and the male. But, like, yes. Like I hate the in-distress thing. When it's constant, it's like Princess Peach. It's like, stop.
The Brave and the Bold, the cartoon show, they have an intro with Wonder Woman in it and Steve. And basically, Batman and Steve are tied to this fucking giant rocket.
Yeah.
And Steve is, like, playing it nonchalant, like, yeah, this happens all the time, I'm used to it. I'm like, god damn.
So that was her whole thing, and so the everyone on Paradise Island, her mom, Hippolyta, was like, well, you're going to have to surrender your powers and your costume and all that stuff. So she said, okay. So she gives up her costume and powers, and thus begins the era of Wonder Woman as a fashionista who knows kung fu. And also turning her comic into, I really love men, and I hope they love me back.
So, I've been critical of Marvel recently for, whenever something happens in the movies, I notice they change the comic to reflect what happens in that. Did DC do the same shit, too, with Batman and Wonder Woman? And
well, I mean, this is before the Wonder Woman show even came out.
Yeah.
So, it was just, she's working.
So the show reflects the comic, all right, I guess, or no?
Well, we'll get to that. Okay. I mean, so she's like a fashionista now. She's working at a fashion magazine. She's getting into all sorts of crazy love triangles and romances. This blind dude named Yi Ching is now teaching her kung fu, and she's a kung fu. And this is the 60s going into the 70s, so it's like kung fu movies are like a big hit. And then they decide, you know what? Let's change the title of the comic to Yi Ching featuring the All New Wonder Woman.
Are you serious?
Yeah, they did that for about 20 issues.
Wow.
And so it now becomes Yi Ching, and you know, and at the same time she's like trying to go on dates with Steve, and Steve likes. And the comic becomes about her essentially trying to please Steve and get his attention.
Yeah.
It completely changes the dynamic that was there, because Steve likes, for the first time ever, because how the love triangle always was Steve liked Wonder Woman, but never liked Diana because she was just his secretary. She was his war secretary. And he was like, you're just a secretary. Wonder Woman's, she's...
Did he not know they were the same person?
No, he did not.
Okay.
But now he did, and he preferred Diana, but because she got a whole makeover, she took off her glasses, and like, she's got this, like, you know, this hip hair and like
I'm sick of these
sexy clothes and stuff. And every issue is, almost every issue is about some fashion related like
mess.
Yeah, like oh no, they're trying to take over the fashion industry. I gotta do my kung fu with this dude named Yi Ching. And it was fucking garbage. So Danny O'Neill and the editorial thought, like, yeah, this is, you know, this is good. Like, this is women empowerment. That's what they thought. And the final issue of that run, of their run, said special women's lib issue. It even said that on the cover.
Okay.
And it's her going to a protest with a lot of women.
I mean, that wouldn't be wrong.
Listen. Okay. In the issue, they say, well, Wonder Woman, are you going to fight for our cause? And she says, the truth is, I don't really like women all that much. And she's like, I can't join your cause, and I can't do this. And is essentially, what the fuck, what are you thinking? And so what happened was, it turned, and then the fashion magazine's about to, the owner, turns out the owner's like a bad guy or something. But then what happens next? Well, we never know, because the very next issue with the new creative team, they come in and they're like, hey, her mom and all the Amazons are back. They give her powers back. And then they do a retcon of like, it turns out like she was thinking weird because, like, you know, she was like, didn't have her powers, and it's like, it messed up her brain.
Okay.
And also during this time, she quit the Justice League because she's like, I don't got powers. And Batman was like, well, if you want to come back, come back anytime you want. By the way, Batman and Green Arrow are both on the Justice League. They don't have powers. But she felt that...
I didn't even think about that.
Yeah, like, I know. And so then she gets her costume back, and Wonder Woman... And the whole reason this happened, it wasn't because of sales. It was because there was a giant campaign by actual women's lib groups who wrote in saying, please bring back the Wonder Woman that actually inspires people. Women, the Wonder Woman who's powerful and not like going crazy for men. And so then they're like, oh, we thought we were like appealing to women who like, you know, who like clothes, and, you know, and so that's a big...
So they essentially wrote a shitty Archie's comic, sounds like.
It wasn't even, not, it was like, I don't know what they were thinking. I mean, because the thing is, Miss Marvel and Captain Marvel, from Marvel Comics, when Carol got her own title, her first title, it was similar. But the thing is, how they handled it was different. Was she was working for the Daily Bugle, and then she got put on a magazine that was about women's lib. But it didn't do the whole, like, I need a man. It was like, men were coming after her, and she was like, oh, God.
Yeah.
But she was always like, you know, she'd be on dates and stuff, but it was still super heroic, and she still had powers. This was just like, oh, you're turning her into Millie the Model, or like, and you're just getting away, getting rid of everything that, like, people loved.
Yeah, that's weird.
Yeah, so that ended, and thankfully. But after that, the Wonder Woman book was, like, a fucking mess. Like, it went from different idea. Everyone was trying to do their own interpretation, which I guess you could say is still the thing to this day. But after Crisis on Infinite Earths happened, George Perez comes around. He's like, all right, I got this. And the biggest inspiration for the movie that just came out is George Perez's initial run.
Okay.
And so he introduces the idea of the mascara. He introduces some new concepts that weren't even used in the movie, though. But she gets all these powers from different gods and stuff.
I kind of wish they would have went into that a bit more. But
yeah, but I mean, it's fine. They streamlined it a bit, but... And he makes Ares finally like a big bad, also used for the movie. Yeah. And to this day, almost everything from the comics usually tries to take off on George Perez's run.
Okay.
Except John Byrne, because he's a crazy motherfucker. And when he got on the title, he was like, I'm doing my own thing. I'm John Byrne. I'm crazy. John Byrne's a nut.
We talked a bit about that.
He had great runs on Superman and Action Comics, and he had great runs on Fantastic Four and Namor, but he had some bad ideas. His X-Men stuff was good too. But so since then, what happens almost every 10 goddamn years, or almost every run even, a writer comes in and is just like, I'm going to tell the definitive Wonder Woman origin or the Wonder Woman story. So, you know, you had Greg Rucka in the late 2000s, no, in the early 2000s come in, and he did his own thing, but it was whatever. But it was, then JMS comes in, and this is right before the New 52, and he's like, okay, I'm going to do it.
His career at DC at that point, by the way,
he fucked himself up. I don't know. Yeah. Like, he was known as... His problems really started with One More Day, with this whole Spider-Man thing. Before then, he was known as one of the best writers in the industry and everything.
And he made Babylon 5 also, correct?
Also that. So Wonder Woman, his whole idea was that she's got amnesia or some shit, and she's got pants on and a leather jacket. Okay.
I don't hate that design.
She's had a leather jacket before, and that was in the 90s when she battled Artemis for the title of Wonder Woman. And then Artemis, the redhead with the long ponytail, became Wonder Woman. And she was just a lady with a jacket and track pants. That was a little weird.
Okay.
Like bicycle shorts sort of thing.
The TV show.
The finishing the comic aspect, New 52 happens, and Brian Azzarello completely overhauls her origin, like fucking from the ground up. There's no more of this baby made from clay shit. Turns out that Zeus straight up put his wiener inside her mom and created her. And it turns out she wears the bracelets because if she takes them off, she goes full Super Saiyan. It turns out she's got the power of Zeus. And so the bracelets were meant to
That's kind of what the animated movie did with Ares. He had to wear bracers to continue his power.
And then all of a sudden, turns out Amazons, the whole reason that they have kids is they find sailors in the middle of the night, they leave the island really fast, find sailors, rape them, and then throw them overboard and cut their heads off.
So they're kind of like sirens, I guess.
He turned the Amazons into fucking cruel and evil and shit. And then the gods are evil and it started out good. And then
okay, so that to me reminds you of how God of War, the video game,
and she became the God of War too.
Oh,
that also happened.
Okay.
So then Rebirth happens, and now Greg Rucka is saying it was all a lie, and he was saying her whole life's been a lie. That since Wonder Woman left the island, she's never been back to the island. It's always been a trick, a ruse. She's always been to this fake island.
Okay.
So she's never truly returned. And a bunch of stuff like that, but...
I hate that, by the way. If you leave, you can't come back. What the fuck?
Well, apparently it's not like that. It's just that that's what the island does.
In the Justice League cartoon, they literally said, no, you left. You can't come back. Motherfuckers, I'm trying to save your asses. God damn it.
So, in 1975, there was a Wonder Woman show starring Linda Carter. And she was a secretary in the first season only.
Yeah.
And it was very popular.
Incredibly popular.
Yeah.
That's what people think of. In America, that's what people think of when they
hear Wonder Woman. It had the Batman effect. Well, it wasn't as popular as Batman with Adam West, but it was very popular. Wonder Woman became sort of this female icon, and
for its time, yeah.
I mean, she arguably still is the number one superhero female icon. I don't care what anyone fucking says about any Marvel character or any other character. When it comes to comics, I'm sorry, but Wonder Woman is the female representative. She is the female icon of comics.
And props to DC for actually getting that out before. And I hate doing the whole company wars bullshit, but I mean, Marvel's been killing them, and DC needed this movie to be good.
Well, because so the history of this stuff is you had Carter Wonder Woman, which is
I don't like her costume at all.
Well, it's all great from the belt up because she looks like she's wearing a diaper sometimes.
Yes,
but the reasons were there are TV reasons for that because. You're too lewd. You gotta fix that. that's what executives sound like.
Yes.
And because I believe the show switched networks twice, and each time that made a switch, the network was like, "Well, yeah, change the shape of them briefs. Don't want anyone seen under a bustle."
That's the worst, TV costume.
It's great from the belt up. And the boots are good too. It's that stupid fucking diaper thing.
But that ruins the whole thing. If you have to give all these caveats to it, that ruins the whole thing.
I know, but I mean, she was a good Wonder Woman.
I've never seen a single episode of that show.
Good Wonder Woman, boring as fuck show. They used to air reruns on Sci-Fi. So, I mean, yeah, I mean, she was a good Wonder Woman.
Okay.
But as far as the show goes, no, it was horrible. So then they tried to do a reboot with Kathy Lee Crosby, this blonde lady. And that didn't, there was a pilot movie for that. Kind of like the pilot movie for Captain America where he rides a motorcycle and has a big giant helmet. These did not take off. Of course, she was on Challenge with Super Friends. In media, she was constantly appearing in cartoons and, in parody works and things like that. But the cartoons, you had Justice League.
Yes.
Justice League Unlimited. And then there was that show they tried to make with, what was her name?
Adrienne Palicki
was going to play her. And it was going to be like, she worked at a Wonder Woman corporation. She was like the head of a Wonder Woman corporation. And she was like, I'm sick of people showing my legs.
Has that leaked, by the way?
That pilot leaked is fucking god-awful.
Oh, wow. It's
fucking, and her costume looks like shit.
It's super shiny. It reminds me of a party store.
Yeah, like, it looks like a Lake Avenue costume.
Yeah.
Awful. Fucking awful. And so I'm thankful that didn't go through. But during that period of time, since the 2000s...
Oh, and there was the animated movie.
Yes. And then, of course, there was New Frontier, which she was very prominent in. Darwin Cook's comic, yeah. Then later turned into a... But through the comics, she's been... she's led the Justice League. She's part of the Justice League. But her merchandise-wise, fucking huge. Like, Wonder Woman, Batman, and Superman...
They're the
Trinity. When it comes to super merchandise, I believe it's them three and Spider-Man that sell the most merchandise. Mm. And I believe that Iron Man is now part of that.
That's so weird.
Fucking insane.
Isn't that weird that, like, 2007, I could have told you, hey, Iron Man's going to be a big seller for merchandise. You're like, what?
Yeah, and now, of course, you have Deadpool to add to that list.
That's kind of weird.
And Harley Quinn.
So. You know what? It's weird to me that Deadpool kind of blew up.
Deadpool and Harley Quinn are now like
their top meme.
When it comes to merch, it's like people love their shit.
Yeah.
As far as the movie goes, back from like near 2000, they were trying to make one. You had so many different people attached to star. At one point, Angelina Jolie. This was in 2005. Joss Whedon was going to be directing, and throughout the years, he was always attached to either being writer or director. And you had a huge list of people who were going to star as Wonder Woman. At one point, when the ball finally started getting rolling, when Snyder did Man of Steel, that's when it was like, okay, we're doing it. Like, Wonder Woman's going to be a movie. There was a bunch of different directors attached. At one point, the guy who directed Drive Bronson, what the fuck is it called? Bronson.
With Bane.
With the big guy.
Yeah,
for you. He was, because he was attached to direct, he was actually attached, but then he walked from the project. Christina Hendricks was going to play Wonder Woman. That would not have been good.
No, I know. It's just,
It would not have been good. I mean, it would have been good for your boner, probably. But not good for Wonder Woman. I think she's a... let me be honest.
I don't think she's a good actress at all.
No, she worked well on Mad Men because that was in her lane. That was her character she could play.
Yeah.
Everything else I've seen her in, I'm like, you're not good. Stop.
Yeah.
It's
crazy to me that this movie even, like, got off the ground.
Well, so they get Patty Jenkins, who directed Monster. And then she was supposed to direct Wonder Woman few years ago, but then she got pregnant, and they're like, okay, well, that, and then they were trying to find other people. And then some lady from Game of Thrones was also supposed to direct this. Patty Jenkins was also supposed to direct Thor of the Dark World. But now she got put on this, and they cast Gal Gadot, who's Israeli, yeah. And it fucking turned out great. It's...
And people love Patty Jenkins now. They want her to, like, that. I don't know if she expected this to be, like, a big career turnaround.
Well, this is...
I mean, she was already...
Okay, let's talk about that.
Okay.
This movie is a lot of firsts. It's the highest grossing for the first weekend, at least. The highest grossing female picture of all time,
okay,
for a female director. The highest grossing female-led superhero movie. The the first very critically acclaimed and well-received superhero, female superhero movie.
Add that to DC's list.
Yeah, also.
To me, it's good. Like I'm very happy that this movie is successful.
It's a very solid movie. And I guess to talk about mini review or whatever, it's
because we were gonna do that. Yeah.
Yeah. To me, the great thing about this movie was that, and a lot of the people who don't like it, who are just, it was okay. It's always like it just felt too straightforward. It's like that's what I fucking loved about it. It didn't feel like it was like this movie's an obvious setup for the next movie, or this is. It felt like a single.
It's a prequel technically.
Yeah, but it felt like a straight up just normal story. It felt a lot of people are comparing it to Donner Superman, and I kind of get that feeling.
Okay.
And they're also comparing it to Captain America, and I get that feeling too.
Natch.
And I liked the first Captain America movie, which for some reason a lot of people seem to hate now.
I feel like the issue with that movie is that Winter Soldier exists.
Yeah, so we're gonna shit on that.
But you and I, we dig like that old school feel that movie has.
Yeah, because there are times that I prefer the first Captain America to Winter Soldier.
Yeah.
It's
don't get me wrong, Winter Soldier's fucking awesome, but I mean
I love this idea of like here's a superhero just wanting to save people.
Yeah, and that's the same thing with Wonder Woman too. It's like it didn't feel to me like oh, I want Steve Trevor's dick. I'm gonna save him. Like it wasn't like that. She legit wanted to rescue him because you know she's just a good person. But the idea is like he had a goal and then she has a goal, and you know she's doing things for the sake of doing them, not just because.
It's a selfless superhero. It's like that awesome idea of like being good for the sake of goodness. It's like the movie could have obviously gone a different direction, and which I was scared it was going to go. Like,
oh no, I was scared to see this movie.
And the thing is, she wasn't even like going after some MacGuffin or anything. Steve was. Steve was going after. Well, he was. They weren't going after the poison. That
he was trying to stop.
He didn't even wanna kill.
He just seemed to get rid of
his fucking name. Luden. Luden, who was his name?
Danny Houston. Just say Danny Houston.
Danny Houston. General Ludendorff.
Yeah.
By the way, based on a real general who ended up aiding Hitler later on.
Okay.
Yeah. Not a good guy. Hitler or the general.
What are you talking about?
So,
I appreciated that this movie was going to say, like, look, the Germans are fucking tired. Like, the British are fucking tired. We want the war to end. Like, just we're sick of it. And he's the fucking bastard who wants to continue the whole.
Because
thing.
The rest of the German,
the high command,
they're like, no, we're ending this.
Yeah,
it's like we're broken and beaten. It's like, come on. And he's like, no, we will not do this.
So I like that him and Maru were like the only Dr. Poison.
Yeah,
they were like the only really like evil characters. I mean, and Ares.
Yeah. Well, yeah, we'll get to that. yeah, it was really refreshing to see this, like, it was just a straightforward, I mean, I loved Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2 a lot, and to be honest, fam, I probably like it more than this, in a different way, though.
Well, that's fine.
It's in a different way, though.
The same kind of movie.
Yeah, this was just, like, watching it, I was like, damn, this is, I'm hopeful.
Yeah.
This is, like, hope. Like,
you know what? The enemy, besides Ares, the main enemy of this movie is war.
Yeah.
And, Chief, right?
Yeah.
They meet these cast of characters.
And they're fucking great.
They're fucking awesome. I love those guys.
Yeah, played by Burn Calico. Yeah.
Yeah, so.
No, that's not Chief, actually.
No,
That's another soldier. I can't find his name. How sad. But yeah, he Chief was fucking great.
What I liked about this, and I know some people say it's getting too preachy. When he mentions that like Steve's people killed off like his people, it didn't feel like ham-fisted. What I thought though was like it really did emphasize that like war was like this fucked up thing that ruins lives, but he was able to not hold prejudices against Steve and his people.
I mean, you look at the movie, Wonder Woman is trying to make war, personify war in, as Ares.
Yeah.
But the real message and the takeaway is that, like, war is just a thing humans do.
Yeah.
And Steve Trevor, like, I love the fact that, like, at the end when Steve's talking to him, he's just saying some people are just fucked up. Like,
yeah.
He doesn't say fucked up, obviously, but he's saying, like this is humanity. Yeah. Like,
and people were trying to argue, like, oh, when Ares dies, they're all hugging each other and shit, like, then they didn't hate each other. Like, no, I think it was meant to be ambiguous. Like,
well, what? It was also that, and I guess it was kind of obvious to me that Ares did have influence over those who were at that hangar and all that shit.
But he wasn't the cause.
No, but he wasn't the cause. Like, Ares was whispering into the ears of Ludendorff and Dr. Poison, obviously, and like and other Germans and shit like that. But
throughout history, he's been doing this.
Yeah, but the obvious thing is that the movie wasn't trying to say, like good wins in the end or this. It's just saying, like, some humans are good, some are bad. Like, and it was like, wow, it's like, it's...
Yeah. It's this very simple message that really should be obvious to anyone. But
the same kind of message that Captain America had.
Yeah.
That Richard Donner but Superman had.
What I loved about this, when it ended, she basically says, look, there's only so much superheroes can do.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, it's up to humanity, each individual person, to step up.
It's
the
idea, like, in Kingdom Come when Superman says, like, we're gonna work with you and not above you, sort of thing.
Yes.
Like, and yeah, it takes everyone. And this movie could have easily done the whole, like, she saves the day, evil's vanquished forever, but it's like, it's World War One. Like, it's
you know,
it's like, that's not how it works. And also, yeah, it by using Ares and using that whole idea of, like, well, you know, this is the great evil. This is what causes the evil in the hearts of men. It's like, no, it's not.
And World War II proves that just by existing. Like, so that's, I dig that. I dig that whole
thing. And also another thing that a lot of people were, that this movie was going to be ham-fisted. The movie was going to be like,
men suck. And
it was going to be, like, straight up nothing but, like, for lack of a better term, pandering or whatever.
Yeah.
But it wasn't. It was, it felt like just a normal fucking superhero movie. A straightforward superhero movie with a great message, and it was just like, I mean, yeah, there was those scenes of, like, but I felt like they were needed, where, like, Samir is saying, like, why he can't be an actor, why Chief is saying what happened to his people, but at no point...
Fucking Charlie. God.
Okay,
damn.
So that's something that I really enjoyed about this movie, is war movies that always skip over the horror of what war does to a human.
Yeah.
They
show the people getting shot and hurt. I get that.
I hate when they skip over the fact about the consequences, though, because
in
this, Charlie was like, they didn't call it shell. Before World War II,
it was shell shock.
No, was it called shell shock?
I believe so.
Or was it called the shakes or something?
It can, well, they named it shell shock because of World War I, to my knowledge.
Well, because I know that it always, it eventually became, post-traumatic stress.
Yeah.
At one point, it was the shakes. It's, it's that
George Carlin does a nice bit on this, actually.
But yeah, so the character Charlie, played by Ewan Bremmer, who, you know, everyone knows as Spud from Trainspotting. He's a sniper, but the war has fucked him up. That he's like, he starts to tremble and
he has to drink, basically. And I know people like to, you know, they show, like, oh, look, he's drunk. It's funny, but There's like a double-sided sadness to it.
He drinks to
ease off the fucking
apparently
war.
In the script, he had a longer story arc, but they had to cut it for time's sake. And by the way, no footage was cut for this movie. Like, everything was kept in. The only thing that was
cut, she said little bits were cut, but it wasn't enough to
warrant. No scenes were cut.
Yeah.
The only thing that was cut was stuff in the script, like major, like, scenes. But yeah, like, you get this, like, he's having these horrible nightmares and shit. And at the same time, it's like, Wonder Woman, when he says he's no good to them, like, he's gonna leave, Wonder Woman's just says, like, but then who will sing for us? Because he has this awesome singing thing. And it's like, damn, that's a fucking hero.
It's so heartwarming. But, and
she's
a fucking hero.
She is, and it's like, I don't know, there's this, like,
it, to me, okay, so, like, I like those Batman movies, right? But I always felt that, like, he's always been, like, a fucked up hero. Like, he never gets praise.
It's the same feeling, and this is more about Gal Gadot, it's the same feeling that Christopher Reeve Chris Evans. Chris Evans,
yeah.
Chris Evans give me That same feeling of, like, it's the their natural charm or whatever that really sell it. Like, because Reeve and Evans, like, they have that.
Yeah.
Like, when Cap smiles and, like, is, like, it's, like, or, like, when Superman winked or smiled, it was, like, yeah. Like, she gives off that same thing, like her, with...
I know people think, oh, she's hot. Like, yeah, she's very attractive, but... To me, there's, like, yeah, she has a natural charm about her that it's, like, it's endearing.
Yeah.
Like, when she, like, when she destroyed that church, which was, like, fucking beautiful, she stood up. Okay, I don't mean it like that. It was an awesome,
did
like.
Did you say the sniper's nest? Oh, man, when she destroyed the church, oh, that's so good.
When she stands up on that bell tower.
When, and her the, fighting in general is just, like.
But I just mean, like, when she stands up on that bell tower and the people. See a savior, like a hero.
Yeah,
it warmed my heart. Like I legit had a little tear come down my eye. I'm like, this is a freaking hero.
It's like, yeah. As much as I like Star Lord and shit like that, it's like, or Thor. It's like when they say that, there's no. I don't feel like super inspired, or like
no,
or thankful, or those warm fuzzy feelings.
Like I like Guardians of the Galaxy, but I think the point is like they're a bunch of idiots that don't really know what they're doing exactly, and that's part of the humor of it. Like okay. But with her, it's like, okay, she's clearly not used to being a hero, but she it works for her.
Yeah.
So, like, I love that.
It's different. It is really different because how women are portrayed in superhero movies, it tends to be, like, we only want to show them badass and scowling and cold. And that can't be denied. You look at Scarlet Witch, she's, like, destroyed and, like, she's, like... There's moments where she's happy, but it's mostly like, oh god, she's, you know.
Yeah.
You look at Black Widow.
Same thing.
She's emotionless and cold. And for some reason there's this trend in Hollywood that's saying the only way to make a powerful woman is she has to be emotionless and cold and distant. And it's kind of like,
what are you saying?
No, like, what it is, it's, I get what they're trying to do. It's like, okay, you know, we're showing women are badass too, but at the same time, you know they're also people. You can make these characters like human beings instead of robots. Like
when she sees the baby, it's like that's such a nice.
Yeah, it was nice to see like a female character who's fucking badass and cool.
Yeah,
and like handles her shit, but who's also an actual character who like who is okay to show her damn emotions. Because throughout the whole movie, it really is about emotions. It's about like what you feel and what you think is right, and about love and. At the end, when she's fighting the man with the mustache.
Let's talk about him. We've skirted around
him. I had comments, but let's just... The comments are all whatever. The man with the mustache. Let's talk about Ares. So, spoiler. Spoiler alert. This is your official spoiler alert.
I said one earlier, but if you are that far in and you haven't seen
it... We haven't really given away real spoilers for the movie yet.
No, but this is a...
So...
This is a major one that...
Let's end it on this. Let's talk about this.
My only complaint... I love David Thewlis as an actor so much.
And most might know him from the Harry Potter movies as Lupin. So, at first, he's his character is... Who's he? Sir Patrick.
Yeah, he's a British...
like, liaison to Chris Pine.
Yeah, he's a government official.
To Steve Trevor.
Yeah.
And
he's trying to essentially get armistice, which means peace... For the war.
Yeah.
Like, okay, so we're thinking, like, alright, he's a funny British guy. As soon as he showed up on screen, like, I could hear our role kind of chuckling a bit, because we know him from movies.
He was in the beginning of the movie, he's kind and gentle, and he's like,
nice old guy.
Yeah. So, then at the end, it's revealed, like, cause she thinks Ludendorff is Ares, but he's not. He just takes this super enhanced drug.
Which I think is Venom.
Like a
precursor.
But then it's revealed at the end that it turns out Ares is actually Sir Patrick. And okay, that's fine. Whatever, cool. It's like he's been hiding and he's been doing this thing where he's trying to play the armies against each other.
Yeah.
You know, it's art of war type shit. Okay, I get it. And then the end climax Dragon Ball Z style fight occurs.
Which was awesome.
Where he's flying, he's got a suit on and like his coat.
He creates his own armor from the wreckage.
The coat's okay. And I'm fine with that. But the moment So he puts on this armor, and it's like the Ares comics armor, and it's like, oh, fuck, this is cool. And he puts the helmet on, and you're thinking, okay, man, it's going to look crazy. They don't black out his face and give red eyes or anything. It's just the dude with the mustache. It's him. It's like a math teacher.
And this is the thing. This is the most common criticism of this movie, by the way.
I know, and all the reviews I've seen, they always mention how fucking goofy it looks.
I loved it just because I...
No, I liked it, too.
Okay, here's the thing. when Marvel has, like,
yeah,
established actors playing these kind of fun, big characters, I dig it. And then it's the same thing for this, too. I know people didn't want to see the mustache, but even when they show flashbacks of him as...
You know, buff body and a math teacher's mustache.
Yeah.
It just seems like that David Thewlis didn't want to shave his mustache.
Yeah, and again, I don't have an issue with the look at all, but I know people... I understand it looks silly.
People are calling him Nigel Thornberry.
Yes.
Smashing. But yeah, it looked fucking goofy.
What's funny to me is, like, he's been doing a lot of press recently because he's on Fargo.
Yeah.
He's not really mentioned this movie much at all, probably because he thinks it's like it was going to be a big, shitty movie.
I mean, also because he probably just want to bring attention to his fucking character.
That is also true. Yeah. But
that end fight, I mean, it's still cool.
It's great to watch.
But at the same time,
yeah, the mustache.
You look at the fucking close-ups of his face, and it's like,
yeah,
this dude looks like he's supposed to be teaching me algebra, and instead he's like fucking screaming about, like, join me.
I love these big ham like scenes where they get to talk about the futility
and
of
slathering themselves, yeah, in honey.
God
and,
damn it.
You know
what I mean. Like, just these big scenes where
you
they
want big ham.
Yes.
Obscure Gentleman fun, head over to www.theobscuregentleman.com. And if you'd like to help support this podcast and the webcomic, please visit www.patreon.com/theobscuregentleman. We thank you for listening.